The Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast is proud to be sponsored by Dr. Spork's 3D Terrain. From retro greenskin outposts to elven fortresses and obelisks, this is hands down the best nostalgic scenery you'll find out there, and all at stupidly reasonable prices. Check it out for yourself by heading over to bedroombattlefields.com/spork, that's S-P-O-R-K, and turn your tabletop into a scene from White Dwarf circa 1994. Andy Chambers not included. Brought to you by bedroombattlefields.com, this is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. On this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast, I'm joined by the Bedroom Battlefields Brazilian. It's John, aka Lord Reaver. How are you doing today, John?
Pretty great. The weather is cold, actually. We're having a bit of a cold time.
How does the weather dictate hobbying to you? Because I know, like, in some places, like Scotland, for example, the minute we get slightly warm weather, we always want to be outside in it. Whereas actual hot countries, it could presumably get so hot that people want to then be indoors and doing lots of hobby and stuff. How does that kind of work for you where you are?
Well, it is a big factor. I know raining influence, like, it's a big influence in painting and all that. But speaking of, like, hot temperatures, it's usually the time I'll be doing my hobby because it's too hot to go outside. It's just sunny. But the sun helps things dry out, of course. And it really is a time, like I said, it's a time when people go outside, go to the pool, go to the parks. A lot of my friends, it's very common in my region of Brazil to drink, you know, mate that some people drink in places like Argentina and the south of Brazil, actually, like hot mate. We drink a cold version of that. So a lot of people will be on the streets drinking that too. I once painted with a friend and we were drinking that. So it is a good time to have hobby activities.
Yeah. So how involved in the hobby are you right now? And how does that compare to previous years?
Well, this year, I would mark my really big involvement in the hobby from the probably middle to tail end of last year to this year, really. It has to do with my history with the hobby, and being a beginner, of course, I think everyone starts slow and then gradually builds it up. But I've been pretty involved. I'm trying to organize a club here in my small town and getting people to know the hobby. It's a very niche hobby here in Brazil, but it's growing. And I am very involved getting rule books, getting miniatures. I'm about to upgrade my paints. I start with like cheap acrylics because I couldn't really justify spending that much. But now I got a steady job and I figured, hey, it's time to upgrade my painting game. So pretty involved.
How does that look for you, upgrading your painting game? Like your paints, for example, what have you got your eye on? Or what have you bought already?
Well, I did start the game with some a very basic kit from Ammo, I think. Yeah, Ammo. I suspect they were not even, like, they were general, like, model and game paints. And then I got out of the university, didn't have a job, so I started getting some cheap acrylics to save money. Right now, I am between a lot of different kits because I really enjoy experimentation. I think it's one of my favorite parts of the hobby. So I'm looking at some Vallejo kits, AK Interactive, Warcolors, Nostalgia 94. It's a really big candidate because I really enjoy old school styles of painting. I think they look fantastic. So I'm really thinking about all of those and what could I do with them? Like what new things I could explore?
What appeals to you about the kind of older aesthetic? Is that the time that you got into the hobby?
Oh, no, not at all. If you want, we can talk about like my step-by-step journey into the hobby, but I don't really have a... All right. So I the hobby was not present during my childhood, but looking back, I really enjoy a lot of hobby adjacent things. So I think my first contact with building something that resembles a miniature was actually when I was like 5 or 6 years old. Here in Brazil, they used to publish this magazine called Recreio, which means lunch break. You know, the lunch break you have in school?
Yeah.
And it was this sort of general kids magazine that would talk about whatever new cartoon there was, some things about video games, sometimes about like scientific things, you know, that kids like dinosaurs and, oh, planets, what if there was alien life, all that sort of jazz. And they actually started with this, they would come with a toy. And the first ones that I can remember, I think they were the first series, were called Robits. The junction of robot plus bits. So there were these modular little robot toys that you could build, and I went crazy for them. I remember vividly seeing them being released on like bookstores and newspaper stands, and I would go crazy for them. So that really was the foundation of small toy thing you can build and create and modulate and just do whatever. I didn't get many because the magazine was a little expensive. And my parents didn't really like me getting them. Not so much because they had anything improper, but mostly because they were expensive. They were quite expensive. But I think that really was the foundation for like building things. And that was around the 2000s. I was born in 99. And after that, I met my favorite toy of all time. Legos. Man, I was really into Legos. Again, very expensive, so I didn't get many, but I loved building. I really loved creating things from the few sets I had. And my favorite one was one called Bionicles. Have you ever heard of them?
No.
So with Bionicles, I really got the sense of deep lore, you know, like having this toy soldiers and things that have like massive backstories and kind of out of the ordinary backstories, like different styles and all. I did have contact with that in previous years. This was around I was like 9 or 10, because a lot of here in Brazil, a lot of people actually watch like older cartoons. Like, I know you're a big fan of Thundercats, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I watched that when I was growing up. It was still being aired on TV around here.
Yeah.
So I always had that. I think I always had that contact with that sort of Conan the Barbarian, like sword and sorcery, fantasy, a little bit of sci-fi. I always enjoyed that. Looking back, it was always very unique. So, and Bionicles was like that. They were just very weird toys. They were not at all like Lego. They had ball joints and they were more... like, they were not, like, miniature size. They were bigger, like, around the size of most action figures. But they were so weird. They were, like, this robot beings. And then I discovered they were actually biomechanical beings. And the bio and bionicle was biological. And they lived in these tropical regions. And they had Polynesian-sounding names. And it really was the start of what I really draw me to 40K later on, which is this deep, like different, very complicated lore. But time went on. I also got into Transformers because they're cool as hell. And I got into video games and kind of stopped doing anything hobby related. Like no more action figures, no more toys. I start growing up. And my first proper contact with the hobby was in 2016, actually. As I mentioned with you, we were previously talking, I went to the US for an exchange program. And in there, I met with some friends. I made some friends in school and they play D&D, you know, Dungeons and Dragons.
Hmm.
And when I went to, and then I thought, cool, can I join? I did join and I was pretty fun. I was pretty bad at playing it. Not that it's a competition or anything, but I didn't really get the appeal of the game yet. It was my first time playing it, and I never really had known role-playing games like that. But I went to a store, a very small, like, retro store that was near the school I studied, and to buy a, you know, a set of polyhedral dice. And in there, there were these weird boxes with cool soldiers in them. One of them had this more cartoonish style robots, which later I figured they were from War Machine. There were also this odd red packages with metal bits inside of them that then I figured they were the blister packs for Warhammer Fantasy. And I am pretty sure the other two boxes I saw were third to fourth edition 40k Terminators and Orcs riding boars, probably for Warhammer Fantasy as well. So that was really the first time I saw miniature kits. And like, I just thought, man, what is this for? Is that like a board game or something? Later down, I would talk to a guy in a hobby shop. I don't remember exactly why we were there, but I would also, but he would explain me a little bit of Warhammer 40k, whatever edition was at the time. It flew over my head, to be honest, but I did see some other awesome kits for, I think they were Malifaux. You know, what's the name of the place Malifaux is based? Oh, Louisiana, like New Orleans skirmish steampunk game. But I came back to Brazil after the exchange period was over and tried to play D&D with my friends. They were not into it, so it kind of went into a little hiatus for hobby and the hobby-related things. And I really had no time. I had to study to finish school, then go to university. And it was around that time that I remembered that odd 40k game and began to get into the learn a little bit about the universe and all that. Of course, there were a lot of, I was not serious at first. 40k is full of memes when you start. But the years passed, I managed to get into a pretty good university. And I was thinking about getting back in role-playing games again. And then the pandemic hit. And man, that time was terrible. But you know, sometimes you have to bring the good out of the terrible. And I think the pandemic really made me question like how much time I was spending on the computer and not really doing things with your hands, you know, like actual things in the real world.
Yeah.
And it was really around this time I got back into role-playing games with some online friends. I really wanted to do it in person, but I couldn't. I also got into cocktail making, like bartending, because I had nothing to do. And my family has this very ornate, like, mixer, you know, the shaker they use. So, and around that time, I was also reading about Warhammer Fantasy. I discovered one of my friends in that group, we were playing Call of Cthulhu actually, was also into Warhammer Fantasy, and we played Mordheim online. Good old Mordheim. And it was terrible. We were using a VTT for role-playing games. We didn't know the rules, but it was goddamn fun. I played a Carnival of Chaos Warband, and my friend was playing Witch Hunters. But it was great, even if it was like terrible play. Time passed. I really got the pandemic, like the lockdowns ended, and I ended up like I got out of that group, you know, as a lot of RPG groups tend to go, it ended. I actually started going in person to my classes in university and thought, hey, I might as well try to get some friends to play here. Anything, really. At first, I couldn't. My first year, like, in-person university, which was my third year of the course, I graduated in psychology, by the way. I'm a psychologist. I couldn't really get anyone to, like, close to anyone. Like, didn't make a lot of friends. I think people were kind of burned out by the pandemic. but I did buy some role-playing games, and most importantly, I bought this little book, this little rule book for a game. I don't know if you heard about it. It's called Gaslands, and it's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
And it's really surprising, because in the second I bought it, I read it, I thought, this is the bee's knees, this is amazing, but I couldn't really find anyone to play. Until I think it was in the end of my third year of college, I decided to go join it's really funny how this story, it's like really unusual how this story goes, but I decided to join a prayer group. I'm Catholic, and I was thinking, hey, I might as well make some friends there. And that I did. And I found out that a lot of them really wanted to play anything tabletop related, role-playing games, board games. One of the friends was also into Warhammer, into miniatures, into all of that things. And for a night, we played a six-person game. My second miniatures game was actually a six-person Gaslands game, because everyone really wanted to try. And that was awesome. Those friends played with me a couple more times. We started some very long role-playing game campaigns. I wanted to play more miniature games with them, but didn't have the time to make. I was approaching the end of my course. I still play with them online, and they'll probably hear this, so shout out to them. And I finished uni, graduated, and couldn't see my friends for a little while because I came back to my parents' city. It's a small town in the countryside of São Paulo, and it was far away from the place I went to university. So I thought, damn, back to square one. However, I started, and it was a rough year, 2024, when I graduated. I mean, 2025, I graduated at the end of 2024. It was a rough year. I was looking for a job. I didn't really have any time to paint the miniatures. I had started painting minis for Gaslands and other games I wanted to play. I met some other friends on martial arts I used to practice, and I played a lot of role-playing games with them too. And I started painting miniatures with one of the guys who was really into like plastic model kits, like the Tamiya ones. And it was back to square one. So I spent a whole year just not painting anything until I met a cousin of mine who, to my surprise, was really into Warhammer as well. We started chatting. I started talking with him that I really liked it. He was surprised as well. He introduced me to another friend. And slowly I found some four or five guys that really wanted to paint miniatures, and that really got me into back in the game. So that's really where I am at right now. Things are good again.
Yeah, no, that's a really good wee background, a wee insight into your journey. And yeah, lots of wee diverse turns in there. We've got cocktail making, martial arts, your prayer group. So it's all
yeah,
in there.
I'm a bit of a, I think the word is a polymath, person that does a lot of things.
How did you find out about Gaslands?
I can't exactly pinpoint what brought me to Gaslands. It might have been one of those videos that's like top five skirmish games or top five games for beginners. But the moment I saw it, I was like, yep, this is perfect. This is freaking perfect. It has cars, which are cool. It's cheap to buy the cars. It's a Kit Basher's dream. You can make all sorts of crazy things. And most importantly, it was an easy concept to sell, you know, like the people could go, what is Gaslands? And I would say, oh, it's Mad Max, but a little crazier. And you play with Hot Wheels cars. It's much easier to explain games like Fantasy, 40K, Frostgrave, all those games.
Yeah. And Nick, going back like full circle to when we kind of started talking, like you talked about the aesthetic that you liked, you know, the I get the impression it's a very 90s aesthetic. You were born in 99, you said. So what got you into that period then, before you were born?
I've often thought about it myself because I don't really have nostalgia for it since I didn't experience those early 80s and 90s aesthetics. But I think it has to do with, one, vibrant colors. I like more realistic paintings and, you know, those grimdark styles that people make. They're awesome. But there's something about the vibrancy and the highlights and just the miniatures themselves. And they're just so full of character. Like when I started looking at the old miniatures, I just thought, damn, I missed out on some really cool stuff. And just the creativity, like one of the things I most like about the hobby is kitbashing and creating your own little guys. And I think the 90s and the 80s really were a time when that was in vogue, you know? That's the time when GW used to teach you how to make the tanks with, like, what they were? Deodorant sticks, right?
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, I really enjoyed that part of the hobby because it's one of the ways I actually can afford to do the hobby. And I was hooked the moment I saw the paintings, and I just love them.
What sort of stuff would we see on your painting table right now, or even, like, you know, throughout this year?
Oh, I'm working on some lots of things actually right now on my table. I'm actually looking at it. You can see some unpainted homemade terrain, like cardboard terrain that I made a while back and haven't painted. Mostly like generic buildings, like for cities, and one that can go anywhere is just a nothing ruin. Miniatures wise, it's mostly 3D printed stuff and kitbash stuff from like toys and things. I'm working on some Marvel Crisis Protocol thing, miniatures. It's an unusual game for someone who just said, oh, I like the retro old stuff, but it's a really fun game. And also it's affordable, and I can also, like Gaslands, I can say, oh, this is superheroes fighting. So people really get into it. I got some Stalker type miniatures for Zona Alpha. Is a game by Osprey, and it's about like scavenge hunting on Chernobyl. So a lot of these guys with gas masks and hoods and AKs, all that. I'm gonna start basing those, and I need to finish a little squad for Rogue Stars from various random miniatures I got. And yeah, that's what's on my painting table.
You kind of alluded to the hobby scene in Brazil being early stage but growing. Could you talk to us more about that?
Of course. So I'm by no means a specialist in the history of the hobby in Brazil. I know some games have been published here. There were some attempts at publishing and, you know, keeping the game alive, games alive as well. I think it's not really a war game, but I think the main points that would be interesting to say here was HeroQuest. HeroQuest was published here in Brazil. It was a big success. I don't recall exactly when. I do know the edition, unfortunately, didn't come with miniatures. It came out with cardboard stands, which is lame, to be honest. I love the HeroQuest sculpts. But HeroQuest was published here. BattleTech was published here in the 90s, I think, and it was that edition that also came with cardboard miniatures. I found some old metal minis for a game called Steel Legions. I couldn't find much data on it. And in more modern times, I'm aware X-Wing was published here, and Star Wars Legion as well. But both games did, X-Wing actually did have a big public, but both games were discontinued. And that's all I really know about, like, miniatures being, like, miniature games being published and brought to Brazil. But 3D printing really changed all that. All of a sudden, like, shops mostly for RPGs start popping up online. And some of them began to sell 3D prints for war games, mainly Warhammer, of course, and Marvel Crisis Protocol, the one I mentioned. And you could always use role-playing game miniatures for skirmish games like Song of Blade and Heroes. And slowly but surely, the stores have been growing and people have been showing more interest. Because YouTubers start talking about 40K and what's this 40K thing. Clubs have been popping up. I know some big cities have wargaming clubs. And it's overall, it's marching towards growth, you know. I think also board games and role-playing games have helped with that. We've had a boom of both of those. Brazil actually always had a very strong role-playing game scene. And our top game was actually Vampire the Masquerade. Brazil has a thing for darker horror games. But it went a bit down in the middle of 2000s, like 2010, and there was a boom with 5th edition D&D. The pandemic actually brought board games really into the scene with some very war game adjacent, I guess you could call them, board games being very popular, like Zombicide. Do you know Zombicide?
Yeah.
Zombicide, Gloomhaven. Oh, gosh. There's another one with mechs. I'm not going to remember the name. And, of course, like HeroQuest games that are basically HeroQuest, but the numbers filed off.
Yeah,
all of those got really popular here in Brazil, and now we have a really big board game scene and community. So I think it's just the right time for war games to catch on here.
You mentioned printing. Do you print yourself?
Oh, no, I wish, but I don't have the space or the know-how to do it. I mostly buy from certain shops that have like huge selections of STL files. They're also usually very friendly people that are also into the hobby. So they'll do things like print whatever random miniatures you can send them or change a mini in the catalog, like make it bigger or smaller. They're generally cool guys like that. And they usually have communities that are also into playing, printing, painting. And it's nice. It's very nice. I do wish it was easier to get plastic kits around here and metal kits, since they're easier to kitbash and build things. Snapping bits of resin is not fun. But that's also changing, because I think the only store I know that's like specialized, it's called Nitsen, and they're actually going to bring one-page rules to Brazil.
Right.
Yeah, they're going to do a launch event and sell the boxes. They also sell a lot of material for War Games Atlantic, Perry Miniatures. I think they're a very new store, but they're growing as well, and the prices are not bad.
Parsec's Diary is an audio journal bonus series on Patreon, chronicling the adventures of my 5 Parsecs from home crew, the Lucky Strikes. Follow this beleaguered gang of criminal scum as they're pursued around the galaxy by lethal cyborgs, xenomorphs, and budget ale-inspired bounty hunters. Parsec's Diary is available now on patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. That's patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. And now, back to the show. When you're buying anything, are you typically in-store, online, or a mixture of both?
Mostly online. Game stores are a rarity here in Brazil, and it's mostly online, unfortunately. I really wish there was a space to go and hang out, talk about the hobby. It's just not something you see very often. You might find some tables in board game shops that you can find in the bigger cities, or they'll let you, you know, rent a table, play for friends. But unfortunately, I don't get yet that experience of going to the hobby shop.
Mm-hmm. You talked about trying to form or forming this club. How's that all going for you?
It's working working's a little slower because it takes time to foment a community like that. However, I'm very optimistic. I work in a university right now. I found a job as sort of like a counselor. I think that's how you call it, you know. And I've talked with the, I think you call her my boss, about just tabletop in general and how that relates to mental health. And she really liked that. So I might out do some events to promote the hobby in the university. I'm also constantly, you know, talking to people. I try not to be annoying because I know, like all hobbies, miniature painting and wargaming is not for everybody. But I do share that I'm doing this hobby, and if they want to join, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So how many folks have you got kind of bought into what you're doing now?
Right now, about 5. We are mostly in role-playing games at the moment, but I have a friend that is working on a Marvel Crisis Protocol roster to play, and another one who is working on Death Guard proxies. So the future is looking bright, and a lot of people just get curious, you know. They will be talking with me, and they'll ask, "Oh, what do you do for fun?" And I don't know. I practice sports, read, paint miniatures, play war games, and I'll be like, "Oh wow, what's that?" So I think the group will grow. It's not gonna be big. I live in a very small town, but it might be big enough for us to do little tournaments and things like that.
Yeah. Is that like, I mean, how do you see it ideally? What do you see the perfect outcome being with it all?
Well, the perfect outcome would be just to maybe get people from the neighboring cities as well, which are also small towns. I live like in a cluster of small towns. To come from events, maybe organize a tournament. As I mentioned, it would be cool. Find a place that we could play like once a month, twice a month. Just put some tables in, bring some terrain, and play whatever. I got here in my collection, I have Gaslands, I have Zone Alpha, I have Rogue Stars, I have Void Admiral, that miniature war game for ships that I really want to build some kitbash ships. And just have this space for people to play what they like, what they want. I think it's good. I think that would be the perfect end game.
You talked about like your psychology background and, you know, that being your job. And I know a lot of people talk about the hobby, like helping them with their mental health. It's certainly not the main reason most people are into it, I'm assuming. But like it seems to be a nice byproduct for a lot of folks. I know it's a huge topic of itself, but what are some of the big reasons you think that might be?
I think first and foremost, it's a work you do with your hands. And most importantly, a work you're actually doing in the real world. I think we spend so much time nowadays in the virtual world doing things that are not concrete, you know, they don't really feel like they exist. So it's very nice. I actually always give this advice to the people that go to, it's sort of a clinic thing. I don't know how I would translate it in English, but I basically do psychology work with everybody that's part of the university, be workers, students, teachers. They can go there for some brief therapy sessions. And I always advise them to pick up a hobby. Like, whatever you want. Music, painting, sports. Because it's so good for your health, your mental health, to actually do something concrete with your hands. I've been even meaning to read more about this. I have, what's the name of the book? Shop Class as Soulcraft in my recommendation list. Oh, you have? Is it good? You recommend it?
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah. Yeah, good book.
Cool, awesome. And just overall, I also think it's an opportunity to socialize, which is something I've seen people doing less and less in that healthy way, you know, getting together with real people. I know you can And I know you can play on online. You can do your VTTs and never ever paint a miniature, but it's not the same thing as actually getting together and sharing a table with your friends, be it painting or playing. So I think that's really a really good point, like a really important point in the hobby. And I think finally, just the creative expression. You know, it's a thing that allows you to, you know, create new painting styles, build your own miniatures. There is also the list building when you get in the game. All that, I think it's very, very good for your head, for your noggin.
I'm going to outstep the area of my expertise, which is very small, so not difficult for me to do, but you can, I'm going to give you some of my thoughts and you can correct me.
Go ahead.
In the many ways I might be misinterpreting things, but you hear a lot these days about dopamine as it pertains to social media or scrolling or, you know, phones. And
it seems
that dopamine's almost become a negative term, even though I expect it's actually a very positive thing in the main, because it enables us to keep wanting to discover and keep wanting to do things.
Yeah.
And I always feel that, you know, I've said many times, I don't use social media, I don't scroll.
I also don't use it.
But like, if I go on holiday, which I obviously really enjoy going on holiday, spending time with the family and stuff, but the one thing that's taken away from me doing that is the feeling of working on something or progressing with something. And I don't know if that is to do with dopamine, but like, if I've got a project on the go and I'm working on it, I always feel really satisfied and content that I'm making progress on it. So these aren't fully formed thoughts, but I just wondered if you had anything to kind of pick up on what I've said there.
Well, the dopamine thing is it's a natural part of the chemistry of the brain. The thing about why it's become a bit of a negative thing is because, like, this screen-based programs, be them like YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, they're so, or even like buying websites like Amazon, they're so well optimized to give you the max amount to get you addicted.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken a bit of a negative connotation, but it's a natural part of the brain. About working and accomplishing like the goals, I think that's just part of being human, really.
Yeah,
it's focusing in the process, and you kind of miss that when you're not in your flow, you know? I think setting up too many goals can be bad for you. I always advise the people that go to my department to set up goals and expectations, but not unreasonable, not out of reality. However, I think it's very important to be goal-driven in your life. You know, have a great aspiration, things you want to do. And like I mentioned in my advice, just starting them. Just starting them.
Yeah, because I mean, if you think about, like, there's a perception that if a person gets very rich, you know, if you win the lottery or whatever, there's this image of you on a beach in a hammock with a cocktail. And I dare say for a day or two that might be very nice, but I think I certainly would start to go mad if all I did every day was lie in a hammock with a cocktail.
I totally agree.
I would need to be, you know, even if I had untold riches, I think I would be busy, but not in a negative sense. I would want to be doing things. So I think that's part of being human. I guess we wouldn't have survived this long if we didn't do stuff. So
exactly. And we like doing stuff. Like, I think it's a very odd thing of our age that people don't do stuff with their hands. They don't have a lot of activities. Like, I think for most human history, both rich and poor, whatever social class you were in, people were doing things with their hands, be there work, cooking food, doing like calligraphy, which is something I want to improve. My writing, my handwriting is terrible. But people were doing these things. No matter who you were doing something. And we kind of miss that nowadays. People just sit around and scroll on their phones and watch whatever Netflix autoplays. It's also vapid and empty, you know?
So when we are seeing a video, say on YouTube, not to take anything away from the creator of this video, but when somebody publishes, like, you know, I painted an army in 24 hours, is there part of our brain when we watch that content that almost tricks us or hijacks something and if given us the feeling that we've just achieved that? Is there something in that at all?
I believe so, yes. Of course, like many things in psychology, I would need to look at the data and to come a conclusion. But there is something genuine about having these feelings of accomplishment by proxy, you know? You can see that dynamic a lot on social media. And by no means this dynamic can be bad. I was reading on, what would it be in English? Oh, bibliotherapy, therapy with books. And there is a positive aspect to this when you read a story and you identify with the characters, they help you realize things about you. It's not that bad. The thing is, people will not take the inspiration out of that and would just say, hey, I did this thing. Or I kind of did this thing. I got the feelings I needed. In the case of an army, saw the cool little guys painted and the dude painted in 24 hours. That's nuts. That's crazy. And they will not do anything particularly interesting with what they learn with the experience of watching the video, which I think it's sad, really.
I guess there's also like an issue with people overlearning now, isn't there? Because there's such an abundance of, you know, a lot of it good, very good information, very helpful. And you could, you know, if you wanted to become a master painter, you could just spend all your time watching people paint. Very good tutorials, but ultimately, unless you're picking up the brush yourself and actioning it and you're prepared to just, for the stuff that you're doing, not to look very good and go through that, I guess,
Yeah, this is why I always advise people, both friends who are starting the hobby or curious, and I would give this advice to myself when I was starting. You have to start, man. You have to start. If you look at the process of learning other things, be it sport, writing, talking, you have to start trying. You know, babies, they don't watch a ton of tutorials. They don't go to class. They start saying, that would be funny, wouldn't it? Tutorial for babies.
Yeah. So you're growing up. 12 tips to be an adult.
See the hottest method to learn talking. Easy 10 steps.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
I use the toilet, so you don't have to.
Oh my god, that sounds like Nostalgia Critic. That's so funny. Anyways, and they don't do that. They'll start like rumbling and babbling. They come up like papa, mama, doggy, all those things, and then they have, you know, proper classes and start reading books. And I think that's the basic structure for really learning anything. You can't just stay at home watching your videos. That they will help, but you gotta start practicing. I think I got away from that mindset very quickly because I mentioned I also really enjoy martial arts.
Yeah,
and in martial arts, you can't just sit in your couch watching videos for like uppercuts and low kicks and what's the best posture. You have to practice.
Mm-hmm.
So. You just got to start. You just got to start and experiment. I think it's a fundamental step of learning anything, really.
It's been a great chat, John. I feel like we've covered so much, so many different areas. I've really enjoyed hearing your experiences and also picking your brains on certain things. I guess the most important question of all for us to finish on, what's your score prediction for Scotland versus Brazil in the World Cup this summer?
Oh, yeah, they're going to play. Total Brazil victory?
I think so. Yeah, it'll be a good 4-5-6-0.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. Our team is not doing swell at the moment. They're not doing hot. They're not great. So I think, being realistic, Brazil is... actually, I don't know the Scottish team. What you can tell me about them?
We won't beat Brazil. I could tell you that for sure. Yeah.
Come on, where's that fighting spirit, Matthew?
But yeah, no. As we finish up, anything, anywhere you want to send a listener, anything you want to share with them.
I'm not really into any social media. You can find me on Discord in the Bedroom Battlefields Discord and some like other 2-3 servers. I don't have an Instagram or anything like that. I guess whatever you're from and you're listening to this, just and you haven't started the hobby, just pick up a brush and start. It's a lot of fun. And enjoy. That's all, really.
Massive thanks to John for a great chat, and you could hear even more if you sign up to our Patreon at bedroombattlefields.com/Patreon, where we recorded a wee bonus episode together as well. You can get that and all the other bonus content that I'm adding in there for as little as $5 a month. And for $10 a month, you could get that, plus a link to your blog, channel or website in the episode show notes for the duration of your patronage. That's bedroombattlefields.com/Patreon or patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. That link will work as well. The point is, it's no longer the worst Patreon ever, and I hugely appreciate the support I'm already getting on there. It's genuinely now helping to keep this podcast going. And speaking of going, I really need a pee. I've no idea why I hit record before going to the toilet first. That's the sort of thing I would give my daughter a row for. So on that awkward note, we'll leave it there and we'll chat again next time.